Got my finger in your jelly. What you gonna do about it, Camilla? I'm invisible. Hello.
Hi.
You're listening to Scary Stories from Camp Roanoke. This is a podcast where we watch as many spooky ghost shows as we possibly can, find our favorite, and then tell you about it.
Mm-hmm. We've watched most of them.
I don't know. I've sort of uncovered an entire new cache of them that I didn't realize was available once I got the Travel Channel app. And I think I found a lot of... I think I found your source, Morgan.
Yeah, Travel Channel is my source.
Yeah, there was Haunted so much. Night Shift, Haunted... Yeah. Like, haunted
paranormal 911.
Yeah, every occupation, every line of work.
Haunted museum curator?
Yeah.
Oh, that should be a thing, though.
That absolutely should be. Haunted hotels, and then there's, like, there's a lot of alien shit on there. There's, like, a lot of Bigfoot stuff. There's, like, a show that's literally called, like, Bigfoot Exists. So they're just, like... Running Period. With that foregone conclusion.
Undebatable.
Yeah. They're like, this is science now. And we have 10 shows about it.
They only really need one episode.
Yeah. We don't have 10 ongoing updating shows about Tyrannosaurus rexes. I would watch them, but I think that's a much more interesting animal that really did exist. And you have to watch 90s like Nat Geo documentaries to find out about them. Which I've done. Have you been into any... I know you got a new picture. You got a frog picture. So that's like your week's interest.
Yeah,
what you've been up to.
We went to Joanne's and got like a handful of children's crafts. So I did the diamond painting of like a minion.
Morgan.
I did some paint by numbers. I got a new diamond painting thing. You're in hell, and there's, like, aliens dancing. It's very fun.
Uh-huh. Yeah. That does sound pretty fun. That'll be a Travel Channel show in about 2 weeks.
Yeah. Watch out.
I also, in the line of, like, cute kids summer fun, me and Ian got these foam, like, tennis... This foam, like, tennis game for kids. We grabbed it. It was, like, $10 at HEB.
Yeah.
And it's basically two tennis rackets that are, like, covered in foam. And the netting is just, like, mesh. And the tennis ball is just foam.
Love
and
it.
I am a near professional tennis player in my, you know, off time. But Ian is not. So this is sort of how
a good learning experience
we work with each other. And we're getting really good. And we play in, like, we live at the very back of our, like, townhome complex. And we face this, like, you know, basically we have, like, a backyard, which is actually technically there to absorb rainwater. But we use it as our own little play area. And so, like, every evening we go out and play with our little foam rackets. And
I love that.
Nobody else comes out and play. And there's children who live in the complex. And it's just us. It's just our asses talking about our lives with our foam little tennis rackets.
I love that.
It's been a great way to stay active. And in the evening time, I'll just be like, Ian, time to play. So we go and we
recess.
Play.
Recess. That is so cute.
We have recess basically every evening. Unless it rains. And then the rain... Reservoir X as it should.
All right. Have you been doing anything spooky?
So I don't know if you remember, but a long time ago I did an episode on Haunted Caribbean. And it like really disturbed me, some of this stuff, but it also really intrigued me because there's just like a wildly diverse amount of people in the Caribbean throughout history. And I feel like we don't have any like movies or TV shows that really mythologizes that in like an accurate way. Because
that's
it's like
really true, yeah.
Astonishingly bizarre what's like the history of like Jamaica or Barbados. Like these places have a wild history. So I've been getting, and then I read a book called The Summer Country last year, which is about that history. And so now I'm sort of doing like a deep dive into like Caribbean history and the history of slavery there and revolts and all that stuff. So I'm reading books and about that general world, and it's like fascinating to me and really, really disturbing and spooky in its own way. And it's just a history that I feel like deserves to be talked about and like mythologized and engaged with, because it's just like, you just don't imagine like an English country house surrounded by like fucking tropical birds and things, and like, it's just wild. Society there is just absolutely wild throughout history, so I'm really engaging with that. And then I've also got this book called Ask Baba Yaga, and it's by this woman named Taisia Kitaskia, and she's a Russian-born woman who lives here in Austin, and she writes, she, like, meditates and embodies Baba Yaga, the Russian forest witch, and answers, like, common, you know, like, Dear Abby questions.
Oh, my God. That's amazing.
Yeah, I love the book. It's so great. So if you want something like that, she also collaborated with an Austin illustrator, Katie Horan, and they made a book called Literary Witches, which I also just bought, which I'm really excited to dive into. So Katie's in the Caribbean. She's in Barbados.
Oh, fun.
She's in the Russian woods. There's a lot going on.
The best places.
I agree.
That's so cool. I've been playing a lot of spooky games.
That you have an appetite for terrifying yourself with spooky games unlike anything I've ever seen.
I do. I've been playing a lot of my niche is spooky games where I can't die. It's more of like a walking sim, like I'm just going through the story that they're unfolding. Mm-hmm. I'm playing this game called Layers of Fear, and you're kind of, you don't know what house you're in any of the story. I think it's about me. I'm a painter. My wife might have schizophrenia. The house might be haunted. So I'm just going through rooms. The layout of the house is constantly changing. Paintings are melting. Shit's popping out. It's so cool. The controller like shakes and makes noises. Ugh, it's so cool.
Wow. I wonder if we could like, if I could like watch you, if you could stream. And
yeah,
could,
I could like, Twitch stream
each
it.
Other. That would be
so fun.
I don't know how any of that works, but my boyfriend does it basically daily, so there's got to be something going on. He might have an idea.
That'd be
all right. So it had been a long time since we got like a classic British haunt. So yes. I thought I would take us back to jolly old England.
Hell yeah.
So I used the television show A Haunting, which is classic and wonderful, classic. And spans many seasons, many years, many vibes. And this one is season 3, episode 5, The Wheat Sheaf Horror. So, England. Long stretches of moors and ancient forests. For nearly 200 years, the Wheat Sheaf pub has stood as a landmark in West Bolden, England. In 2004, after it had been standing empty for almost a year, David Guy bought it and hired a new staff and basically kind of like refurbished it back into its former glory as the town pub.
Love that.
Business is good, but his staff start telling him that they're experiencing weird things at the pub. So this takes place in northeastern England, I think. If you're British or you live in the UK, I'm just going to ask for you to just lower your expectations. I'm just going to ask for you to bring those right down. Because the North, I'm pretty good with UK accents and Ireland and Scotland and all that shit. But northeastern England has maybe the weirdest and most inscrutable accent I have basically ever heard. I watched many videos of people doing it, and I was like, none of this is making sense to me.
Really?
None of these dots are connecting. It sounds sort of like Scottish, but also like knee, good knee, like, but also like not. It's very weird. And it was voted like the most attractive accent in the UK, and I was like, what?
Weird.
I can't understand a damn thing anyone's saying. Maybe that's what's attractive. That's the way to go. I don't know what he's going on about. Lovely chap. So I'll just like vaguely go off of my memory of how these people sounded.
This podcast is made possible by our supporters on Patreon. At the $5 tier, you get a personalized and unique spooky story of how you became a camper read on the air. And at the $10 tier, you will also receive a high-quality enamel pin with our logo. Visit patreon.com/SSFC or visit the link in the show notes.
So Camilla Momet is the manager, and she says, "I always got the feeling there was something watching us. I've never been afraid, never, until I worked in the Wheat Sheaf." Sounds like a good manager.
Yeah.
So her like first weird thing that happened to her was that once she had made a tray of Jell-O for Jell-O shots, because this is a modern pub.
I love that.
So she made a huge tray of Jell-O. And when she went to the kitchen to check on it, she found that the fridge doors were already open. And there was a handprint in her jelly.
That's just rude, and I love it.
It is truly rude. "Got my finger in your jelly. What you gonna do about it, Camilla? I'm invisible." So, strange things like this shit happen on a nightly basis. A thumb in the shepherd's pie. No, I don't know. Oh. I don't think that happens. So, David, the owner, he's like, "You hear noises all the time, you know, bang, bang, bang." Once David went to check on the noises, and he's holding what I think is a cricket bat, which basically looks like a hazing paddle.
Yeah, a paddle. Like
something that's meant to smack someone's
he's
ass.
He's going to come spank you.
But he goes up with his little paddle, and he finds nothing. So after hours one night, the staff is hanging out, and David's like, "Look what I got. Look what I've set up." So he pulls, like, the tablecloth off a table, and he has put the full alphabet under the glass.
I was worried it was going to be Ouija-themed.
It is Ouija-adjacent for sure. And they're like, well, they just erupt in dissenting opinions. "I don't believe in ghosts. That's bullshit. It's go get the cricket bat." And they're like, "No, let's do it. Let's do it." Like, and then he's like, "Oh, I don't want to do it." And they're like, "Ah, you're scared, are ya? You're scared, are ya?" So it's just like a mess of English people talking. And so they get a glass and they turn it over to be their planchette. They all put a finger on it. And David's like, "Spirits who walk the halls of old Wheat Sheaf pub." And then the glass starts moving. And they're like, "God, go on, you're doing it. No, I'm doing it. No, you're not." It's just like. And it spells G-E-T-O-U-T. Get out. Then, as they're doing this, they begin to hear footsteps above them.
Oh.
And they're like, "Oh, you're scared, are you?"
Yeah.
So, then the glass moves again and spells O-R-I-L-L-K-I-L-L-Y-O-U.
Oh, my God.
"Or I'll kill you." And then it over and over spells, "Please help me, help me, help me." So they're all fucking creeped out by this shit. Although this is a very fun and interesting thing to do with a bunch of waitstaff and a manager. Usually it's just drugs. So I think it's good that they've got another activity.
Diversified, yeah.
So Camilla says that she senses that it's a little girl and that that's who puts her hand in my jelly. Then, when no one had their hands on the overturned glass, it zooms to the corner and says yes. And she says that she thinks it's a little girl. So, after that evening, they're, like, trying to just, like, you know, showing up for your shift, business as usual. Until they're asked to host a fundraiser for a charity. So girls at the pub had the idea of bringing in some psychics and collecting money for readings for the charity. So, and pub regular, Martin Brown. Martin, whatever, however the fuck they choose to say this poor man's name. He doesn't believe in psychics. And he goes, I was laughing, carrying on with my friends. How stupid could I get, you know? How daft I was. That's how daft I was.
I love that.
Martin. So we don't hear from him for a while, but it's important to know that he was very skeptical and, you know, bald. He looks like your typical... He looks like your typical Northern English, like, a builder. Like, he's a guy who knows how to build a wall, and you call him, and he's good and honest. But he don't believe in psychics. So, they find two mediums to donate their services. Suzanne and Lana, I think. And Suzanne, when she walks in to do this, like, night of spookery... feels an intense feeling of negative anger when she walks into this pub. And she's like, ugh. But she basically, like, pushes it aside and goes on with doing these, like, you know, 5-pound readings. So it sounds like I'm referring to their weight. But it's money. Money, Morgan, money. So, a threepence, I believe. Two and a threepence on me knickers. That's how much they cost. So she's giving these readings. And then a few hours later, she takes a break to go. I think you have to go upstairs to go to the bathroom. Ugh. Yeah, that's a mess at a bar.
That's dangerous for drunk people.
It is. So up the stairs, she sees dark eyes staring back at her. And then a transparent little girl sort of appears there, pleading for help. The psychic... then has a vision of the room she's in, as if it was about 100 years ago, and it was a child's bedroom. And the girl is sitting on the floor by the bed with bruises on her face, pleading Suzanne to help her. Then, in a blink, she's back, staring in her reflection above the sink in the bathroom.
I'm emotional.
Go ahead and push that down. This is a British haunting.
So you're right.
Please don't tell me about that again. So, at the end of the night, Suzanne is chatting with David, the owner, and she said, did you know you've got a spirit upstairs? A little girl. And David is stunned because it was not common knowledge about the little girl sort of suspicion that they had. So, with David's permission, she decides to take another look around the pub upstairs.
Aww.
So, she makes her way to the kitchen and fridge area, and Suzanne is bombarded by images from another time again. This time she sees a man pulling the girl downstairs into the cellar. A few nights later, both psychics, Lana and Suzanne, return after hours to help the girl move on. They're like, yeah, I've got some time. We'll come over and just do
impromptu rescue medium action.
Exactly. Good for them. Oh, if only they had moved to Canada and become the rescue me. They don't have the heart. They don't have the stage presence.
They don't have the puns.
They could never. Never mind. So they start by cleansing the pub. Then Suzanne contacts the spirit of the young girl. But she feels that a spirit named Joseph is presenting her from contacting the girl. Suzanne senses him in the basement. So she sends the staff there to hopefully distract him so that she can stay up and talk.
Oh.
So she makes a circle of salt in the basement and, like, puts all of the staff in it inside the circle. Oh, what a team building moment for them. So she puts the entire staff surrounded by the circle of salt in the basement and is like, you be ghost bait here for the dark, dangerous one.
For the violent one.
And me, the one who can see and communicate with them, will go upstairs and leave you all down here.
That's so scary.
It's really scary. But it's also a bunch of dudes. And dudes in scary situations tend to make a lot of dumb jokes. So I'm sure the mood was lightened a certain amount. So Susanna and Lana, it's cute. Began to look for the girl. They go to the bathroom where they believe her bedroom once was. Mm-hmm. And she puts up like a small audio recorder that sort of goes throughout the night. They make a circle of salt and protection and call in the little girl. Then the little girl appears inside it to Suzanne, and she says that her name is Jessica. Suzanne asks her what happened to her, and Suzanne receives an image of a girl being beaten by two men and killed.
Oh my God.
She asks where her body is, and Jessica says, "I'm still here." And so then, Suzanne becomes sure that Suzanne then becomes sure Jessica's body is in the wall, is in a wall somewhere upstairs. Meanwhile, downstairs, the staff are becoming restless, standing in a circle of salt, basically as shark bait. Then Camilla accidentally steps outside the circle, and then she says that she lost control of her body. Her legs started jerking around, and she had to be held down by the other staff. So they bring her up to the dining area, and she's able to, like, kind of calm down and reclaim her bodily autonomy. And the psychics and the staff all join together. And Camilla says that she felt like she wasn't able to breathe and like she had been attacked.
Oh my God.
So the psychics tell the staff that they had found out about Jessica. Then they replay the voice recorder for everyone, and they captured a man's voice who said, "I'm going to kill you, Suzanne."
Oh my God. I know. Thank God for the salt.
So Suzanne is undaunted. This lady is pretty hilarious. She's very intense and earnest. And in her interviews, she was just like, "I knew that I had to go and be there for that little girl because no one else was. I knew I couldn't show an ounce of fear because he would get in through there."
Hell yeah.
So Suzanne's intense. She knows that she's got to help free this little girl from this pub. So she goes up to like a storage room near the bathroom. And she's like, "This is where the body is." And then David, the owner, is like, "Okay, listen, you guys can have tonight to, like, bust into this wall. But if there's a fucking mess when I get back here tomorrow, I'm getting out my cricket bat.
If I see a little dead body.
If I come back and one of you is cradling a skeleton, you're all being cut. You're not working tomorrow." They're like, no, yeah. Go home, David. I think you can trust about 6 servers and a bar manager with the excavation of a wall. I think you're okay." So he leaves, and then they're just like, clonk, straight into the wall, busting open the plaster.
Love it.
And they find, behind the plaster of the bathroom, a huge brick fireplace that had been, like, basically plastered over. Why people just, like, are like, "Oh, well, this is a nice historical feature. Let's plaster over it. Make it look like it never was. Excellent." I don't know why people do this shit.
Yeah, it's insane.
So they work through the night, and David comes back in the morning to find an unearthed fireplace and plaster all over the bathroom. And he's like, okay. So this is exactly what I not wanted to know about right now.
What are you going to do about it, huh?
And they're all just like, you know, dusty and clawing at the wall. And they're like, "No, David, no, you don't understand. Look." And then they show him, they find a piece of concrete with a bunch of hairs stuck in it. And they're like, "Look, David. Look."
Oh, Jesus.
Which they used to use, like, horsehair in insulation. So that's just, like, something to throw out there. Maybe a reason why you might find hairs in your plaster or your concrete. But concrete really isn't insulation, is it? That's just concrete.
I mean, you buy insulation like sheets. Like, it's already done, right? Or is this so old they would have, like, stuffed shit?
Oh, this is... This is far before there are sheets of insulation. This is... No. This is insulation with something mixed in a cauldron. And then someone just, like, scooped it up and then it into the wall. This was... There's no... No. This is not this old house. This is older. So there's hair in the concrete, and they also find a little piece of bone. And then Suzanne, the psychic, is, like, convinced that this bone belongs to this woman, this little girl. So they reconvene in the main pub, and Suzanne notices that Joseph the Spirit is down there, and she kind of has a little showdown with him. And she's like, why did you kill Jessica? Why did you do it? I'm giving her all kinds of accents. Just
I love it.
We're all, once again, British people, we lower the expectations. So, and apparently Joseph's spirit says she got in my way.
What?
So days pass, and later, in a local library, Suzanne and the bartender from Wheat Chief are looking for information on Joseph's potential identity. This has really been like a community building exercise for everyone.
I love this.
It's very cute. And the fact that now they're going to their free local resources to find information, it's just wonderful. I'm just glad these people are all interacting with each other.
I'm glad they have each other.
Once again, because the alternative is usually drugs. So I'm just chuffed to bits. Wonderful. Wonderful work. So they're looking for Joseph's potential identity. Mm-hmm. And in a photo of a Sunday school class, Suzanne finds the girl she believes is Jessica. Mm. And they find in a book an image from like the local area of photographs. They find who she believes is Joseph. So the pub goes quiet for a few days. Well, I mean, as quiet as any place where British people gather and drink. Then one night, Camilla sees a heavy wall decoration. Almost like a concrete or like heavy, just like flounce, like a decoration, just like a little.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Not like a can, not like a wall, like a light sconce, but like a heavy, just like curly Q decoration.
Flourish.
Yes, on the wall. And it flies off the wall and smashes on the ground, and she has to duck to avoid being hit by it.
Oh my God.
So they're like, oh, fuck. So she's, like, spared a serious injury, and they're like, shit is, like, escalating. Mm-hmm. Then the psychic Lana calls David at his home after she has a vision of him being pushed down the stairs of his home by David, or by Joseph.
By
the spirit Joseph. So David avoids taking his stairs that night at his house and potentially avoids a calamity.
Was he stuck upstairs?
I don't know. I think he was stuck on one floor.
I get a hotel room.
I would like scoot my butt up like a dog so that there was basically no way to be pushed down. Or it's like you just scale it on your stomach. It's like, push me down. How could you possibly humiliate me more than I'm doing right now? Injure me. Try it. Inchworm. So, back at the pub one night, they're still, like, excavating this wall as, like, a group staff project. And Martin Brown wanders upstairs, pub regular, bald man.
Right.
And he finds the staff and Suzanne sorting through the rubbish from the wall. And Martin... And this is where Martin's memory ends. But then Martin says, if you want to find a look behind the green paint. And they all stare at him. And they're like, you're usually talking about rugby or whatever. You're usually talking with your lads. Footbally, bollers, and your rugbies. So, they're shocked. And Suzanne's like, what? How do you know? And he says, if you want to find the little girl, she's buried behind the green painted bricks.
Oh.
Then he turns to leave and then yells, she belongs to me! Then, unfortunately, there had to be an exorcism because Martin had got the spirit of Joseph in him.
I went to the pub and all I got was this lousy spirit.
And a lot of community enrichment. So they're having to do it. They had to like exorcise him. We all know what an exorcism is like.
Do they do it in the pub?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. So they do that. And
that's crazy.
Martin is back on the, like, interviewed in the show, A Haunting, like, after all of this, and he looks very earnest. He very much looks just like a builder. Like, he just looks like a working class guy, blue collar guy in Northern England. And he was like, the last thing I remember was going upstairs and seeing the fireplace. I was daft.
That's so crazy.
It is crazy.
At least you're not aware of what's going on.
I think it might be a little more unsettling to not have been aware.
I don't know if I could handle, like, hearing and knowing that spirit that's in me.
But how would you feel knowing that someone else had driven your body for, like, a day?
Could happen when I'm asleep every night. I don't know.
I don't think that does happen, Morgan. I think your husband would probably let you know. But maybe someone takes over your body to sleep. Of that, we can never be sure.
The world may never know.
And then Suzanne finally gets a vision that sort of like clears up the story of what happens. She sees that Joseph had killed a woman. Jessica had seen it. And it cost her her little life. So they all join together in prayer. And Suzanne asks her guides to pull out the spirit of Joseph into a crystal. And eventually they seem to succeed. And it all works out, and Martin has been successfully exorcised. Martin says that he was left with, like, memories from Joseph.
Ooh. So he still goes to the bar?
Yeah.
Love it.
Where else are you going to watch whatever game it is they watch? So after that, it's quiet now at the pub, except for the laughter of regulars and the clunk of glasses on the tables. Martin is perplexed by this memory of another person he suddenly has, and the rest of the crew are proud of themselves for not having backed down from the problem plenty of them hardly believed in when they started working there. So look at that.
Did they ever find the green paint?
I don't think so, which is weird.
Why would... We have the exact location. We should stop now. You know?
Yeah. I mean, this is from like 2004 or something. Or like 2006 or 7. And I'm not even sure I believe in like the veracity. Although, if this is false, you'd have to get a lot of people on board to go on a television show and talk about it. Which is not easy. I mean, it's hard just getting Morgan onto this podcast every week because she does not love the spotlight. So getting like 6 British people to agree be on television when they're not appraising the value of antiques, that's tough.
Yeah. Talk it's about out of their
natural their element.
Yeah.
I
want to know about this woman that he killed. Is she on the property too?
It doesn't seem that way, or at least it didn't come up in this story. But it seemed like he was a pretty seedy character, and there was probably some sex work happening at this pub, and I don't know, maybe there were highwaymen. That happens a lot in England and a lot in pubs where there's highwaymen. You guys get it. Where you're riding along in your little carriage in your little life and your privileged little muff. You've got your little hands and your little fuzzy. And then all of a sudden there's a knock on your window. And then your mummy and daddy are sliced through the neck and stolen all your goodies and stolen your horses. And then they go to a pub and they're like, oh, I've got all this money and this little fuzzy thing from this little girl. And that happens a lot, like so often in pubs and where highwaymen and murderers go.
I just want a pint.
Morgan, yeah. All right, so I'm going to tell a Patreon story.
Ooh!
This is Patreon stories are for folks who join up on Patreon at $5 or more, and I write a little story of how you came to come to camp. So this is for Jerry Bookhammer. Morgan and I continued our drizzly tour of the U.S. for the spring and decided to visit some friends in Austin, Texas. Our trip was lovely and fun, and as we went to leave, we drove through some cute German towns around central Texas. We pulled over to stretch our legs, and I noticed a wooden sign hammered into one of the trees of the forest-lined street. Willkommen Hexen. We were intrigued, so we followed the knobby path into the woods. Standing in a small clearing was a shop in the style of probably some kind of Bavarian village. I don't know. I've never been. I've only seen Central Texas versions of German architecture.
Yeah.
It had a bunch of cuckoo clocks on the door, so we figured it was another German-ish tourist shop. We pushed open the heavy wooden door into a warm and ancient-looking living room. There was a huge pot boiling on the hearth, and several cats trying to pull cuckoo clock dwellers out from behind their little doors. I think this is someone's house. We should leave? Morgan whispered to me. I could practically feel her begin to sweat. We turned back towards the door, but a woman stood in front of it. She had bright blue hair and a wiry smile, and she was wrapped in shawls and thick strands of beads.
Cool.
Oh, God, Morgan breathed. God, what do I have to do with him? She cackled. Well, isn't that a normal thing to say? I said, gripping Morgan's hand. We'll just be evading you now, if you don't mind. Enough. You come to Frau Buchheimer's shop, you must want to Kukusur. We had barbecue like 30 minutes ago, so we're good. 999 Kukusur, cuckoo clock. Come in, pick a clock. She pulled a cat off of a clock on the ground and began pulling hair off of it. She's probably just a hippie holdout from the 70s, Morgan. She's harmless. Morgan nodded, but the progressive shade of beet red her face was turning told otherwise. Listen, if it gets like 3 notches weirder than this, we'll both just run out the door, okay? So how long have you been in the hill country? I asked. Frau Buchheimer spat on the ground loudly. We recoiled. You think I don't know your tricks? Keep your questions close to your breast like your weapons. Morgan held the number one towards me. It's a very intricate clock. Yeah, it should be. Had to be nice enough to trap 2 peoples inside, huh? Why don't you take a closer look? Morgan held up a number 2. Oh, you know what? I just remembered. I used the sun to tell time, so we should get going. Out of nowhere, a cat jumped on Morgan's head, and that was it for her. She threw the cat off and ran out the door yelling, 3! I pulled out our card and threw it behind me as I ran after her. If you ever want to teach a workshop at our camp, please email me. Have a good one. Goodbye. So we left Jerry Buchheimer in her home with her clocks. Hopefully she stops by. It's always nice to get sort of a new perspective on craft time. So welcome to camp.
I like the idea that you could feel me begin to sweat.
Oh, like the air. I can feel you sweating. I know.
My own humidity.
It's not a tangible, actual felt sense. It's just I know you well enough to know when you begin to sweat.
It's like when the mother knows her baby is crying.
Exactly. I know when Morgan is sweating somewhere. Due to nervousness.
Now.
I know you are. I can tell. But it's not out of nerves. And I can tell when it turns into fear sweat.
It's a very real thing for me.
I know. It's in our canon. It's in Camp Roanoke lore.
It's part of the lore.
It is. It's part of our story, Morgan. Because you're part of our story.
Oh. Well, welcome to camp.
Welcome to Camp Cherry.
You spooky bastard.
So glad to have you. So, if you want your own story, become a patron, $5 and up. We so appreciate it. It's so kind and wonderful to support camp. And you can also leave us a positive review. That's another really great way you can support camp that you can do absolutely for free. You can also find us on social media. I'm on TikTok at Lord Catherine, K-A-T-H-R-Y-N. I make videos and that's a fun way to keep up with me. And you can email us your ghost stories at letterstocamp@gmail.com. And we'd be so, so happy to tell them to our audience, who is voraciously loves to gobble that stuff up.
Hell yeah.
All right. I believe that's it. Happy, happy spring, guys. We made it. We made it. I am so happy to be alive and happy to be here and that it's warm. And me and Morgan are going to be able to see each other soon because we're both our second vaccination shot soon. And it's just like, it's morning again. It feels so good. I'm so happy. All right. We love you all. Have a spooky night.
Filled with restless dreams.
Of haunted things.
Bye-bye.
Bye.